All right. I don't know what happened.
I think you just have an aversion to dishwasher talk. How dare you?
Is that what it is?
That's our new segment.
I mean, I love talking about dishwashers because I don't have to ever touch them. My wife not let me load the dishwasher.
Nice.
Yeah. It's perfect.
Oh, my God. It's the best relationship.
She says I, quote unquote, load it wrong.
Yeah, that my wife does the same thing, and I think it's on purpose.
Really?
Hmm?
Why do you think the reason for that is?
Because she doesn't like loading dishes. She's smart.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. She apparently there's a particular way you're supposed to load your dishes.
Yes, I'm in your wife's camp.
And I don't do it that way.
Yeah, of course, you're all willy-nilly.
Look, I was poor growing up, Nick. I didn't have a dishwasher. I don't know these things. I was never educated.
I was raised on the wrong side of the tracks.
But that's nice. So you're getting yourself a dishwasher for your birthday, huh?
Yes, yes.
That's very impressive, Nick, I gotta say. I'm impressed.
I'm very grown up, buddy.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Yeah. I didn't ask for a Lowe's gift card, but it worked out. Matter of fact, I thought about it like up until the day before my birthday.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I don't even, what do I want? I don't even want anything. You know what I'm saying? Like for real. Like you're right, right? Like there's stuff that I could get.
Yeah, it's not like my wife and your wife doesn't know like, oh, their comic book store is right up the street. I could just go get them that, and I'm sure that will last them a long time.
Yeah.
But when push comes to shove, it's like, what am I going to do? Bring home another 20 comic books? How am I ever going to look at that Batman Dick comic and be like, that's the one I got for my birthday present from my wife 10 years from now? No, you're not going to think that. You might think of the Batman Schlong comic, but, you know, you're not going to think that was my birthday present.
The Batman Schlong comic.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
At least that's what I've heard. I heard that's what all the kids are raving about.
Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, I'm doing a comic talk today tomorrow.
Hey, I thought you were taking 2 weeks off.
Well, I already recorded it.
Yeah,
I recorded two episodes for this week, and I already had one pre-recorded, so there's going to be three episodes out, even though I'm not breaking podcasting.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're breaking your own edict, son.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, that's one of the things I talked about. I talked about the penis, Batman penis thing. I talked about the Joker movie and about the Captain Marvel trailer.
Oh, all very interesting topics.
Yes. Yes.
If only this was Comic Talk Today and we had a forum to discuss all of them.
I mean, we can talk about whatever you want, dude.
But hence we don't. So let's move on. just to give you a heads up.
Yeah.
Young Nick
had mutton
wrapped
chops.
wrapped up. Magic Mutton Chops was my nickname. He wrapped up Batman No Man's Land.
Oh,
done.
Nice.
Put it in a corner because it's done.
That took you how long? 4 months?
Yeah, but let's not forget, there was 6 books, including the 2 prequel books. And each book was about 460 pages to about 600 pages each.
Sure, 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 sure.
So I don't think that was too bad.
No, I agree. It's a big one.
Yeah, that's one hell of an event.
Yeah, it's a big one.
How long has it been since you read that? Or are you pretty versed in it? Do you recall it pretty well?
Oh, the last time I read it was probably at least 5-6 years ago.
But are you pretty versed in it? Do you recall it pretty well?
Yeah, I think I remember good chunks of it.
Now you tell me, because it could be my fever dream. Or maybe I'm just a dum-dum. Batgirl. The Batgirl that has... There's no opening in her suit. Mm-hmm. Her mouth is like, the mouth area is just part of the black costume. You know who I'm referencing?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In one effing issue, don't they reveal her as Helena, the Huntress?
You might be right. I don't remember that. But you
and
might be right.
And then all of a sudden, it's almost like they, like, went back and like, no. Whoever just went rogue and made it the Huntress. No, it's the mute Asian girl whose father.
Yeah, orphan.
Sort of a, yes, who abused her as a young child, taught her the ways of like an assassin.
Yep, yep.
But she was that, like, in all of the other issues, except for this one issue where Huntress pulls off the hood and it's revealed as Helena. That's why I'm like, did editorial miss that? And if they did, wouldn't you go back and like let the people know? Because this isn't the first collection that has No Man's Land in it.
Right.
Wouldn't you reference like, hey, this is a mistake. Here's a no prize. We didn't mean to do this. Because honestly, I felt like I was a little cuckoo. And every time she took off her costume or did sign language, I'm like, wait, is this Orphan? Is this? Because I liked the character. I thought it was cool. Either way, I thought it was cool. But it just, it was a head scratcher, dude. And I, and like I said, I'm reading like 1800 page event. And I'm like, that's sort of a big no prize to let that one go through.
Yeah, you gotta wonder about that sometimes. I never
thought
about
that. Like, it would be different, like Spider-Verse. Yes, that was a big event, but nowhere near what No Man's Land was, issue-wise.
Sure.
Like, that was one hell of a big event. Like, everyone had to be on the same page for minute details. But it was a good event. I was really, really impressed, being that it was my maiden read and voyage for it. It was fantastic.
Very nice.
Except for there was, and I gotta say, there was some Azrael, because I know people poo on Azrael. There was some Azrael issues that were really good.
Look,
I thoroughly enjoyed his relationship to Batgirl,
mm-hmm.
and his relationship to the one woman who Batman treats almost like a mother-in-law. She was running the, like, she's the nurse. She always runs the medic facility.
Yeah.
But I really like that relationship. Now, the character of Nick Scratch? Ooh, Ooga. Ooga. Every time there was an Azrael issue, I was like, please let Nick Scratch not be on. And then finally, when they wrapped up that storyline, I was like, oh, thank God. Okay, good. But you know, the one thing with Azrael that I wish they would continue, and some writers do, some writers don't. I wish they would continue. And this is what I found fascinating in Nightfall and even some of the more modern Azrael. I wish they would continue, whether he's crazy or not. I like the voices and the spirits talking to him.
Yeah,
I think that's neat.
I don't understand what everyone's problem is with Azrael. I think he's a cool character.
Yeah. I think if he was talking to more, like, that's what I like about Moon Knight. I like that it's like, is spirits talking to him or is he crazy? I'm not sure. Like, you can't trust his narrative.
Well, that's only in the past, like, four volumes, right? Since Ellis took over.
Right.
When, I can't remember who the guy is. The one that David Finch, drew.
Brian Michael Bendis.
No, it was the one before Bendis. No. It was the one before Bendis.
Houston?
Houston. Right? Yes. Huston.
Yeah, Huston.
The one that he, that
no,
was,
Hunlin.
Hunlin, that's it.
Hunlin, yes.
It was the one that he wrote. That's where all that stuff started.
Yeah, and I like it.
It was great.
Fun. That's a great series too. For sure. I think most Moon Knight runs, as we go off on another tangent, I think most Moon Knight runs are way above average. They always take it in interesting little directions.
Hmm.
Once you get up to Hunlin, I think they take them in fun directions.
Yep.
Whether that's Bendis, whether that's Ellis, it's all fun.
Yeah, it was,
some are
it was
more
a lot
successful
before
than
that.
Others, but
mm-hmm.
still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was much different before that. Yeah, I agree. The first like six issues, the first arc of that Hunlin run was really good.
Yeah. And really like graphic.
Yeah, extremely graphic.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely graphic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's good stuff, man.
For sure.
That's good stuff.
I mean, let's slow our roll. you can't beat Sienkiewicz doing it. That, yeah. As a conventional comic book, they were doing some pretty cool stuff in Moon Knight.
Mm-hmm.
But no, going back, No Man's Land, fantastic. I enjoyed pretty much everything about it, except I liked the story of, I liked the story bits that incorporated No Man's Land in the Catwoman issues.
Mm-hmm.
But there is just some weird ass drawing of the female figure that's just, ooh, it's a head shaker. Ooh, ooga.
Yeah, I don't own most of that series because I just didn't care for it.
Yeah, I get it.
I didn't care for it. I did enjoy the Robin one. Robin was really good.
Yeah.
Who was it? Was that Dixon that did that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chuck Dixon. Yeah, that was good stuff. I liked that series.
Yeah, and I even liked, the spoiler stuff.
Yeah,
where her mom finds her costume, yep. costume.
Yep.
And then grounds her.
Yeah.
There was just some really good bits. I remember how it was like, how are they going to make it out of No Man's Land? How are they going to reset everything? And I like that No Man's Land was just sort of like, yeah, it's done. Like, we're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
The story was told. Close the book.
Yeah. So what do you think is about Azrael that people hate? I want to talk about this.
Okay. I don't know, because I like the voices. Like I said, I like the religious overtones. I think that's sort of cool. I like the weird zealot nature. And this is like, I think this is more Nightfall version of Azrael.
Yeah.
But I know some of the modern writers sort of took it in that direction, had voices talking to him, whether or not they were real or not. Who the hell knows? I don't know if it... Do you think they heard these complaints and that's why they changed his costume? To the white and red instead of the what, yellow and red?
Yeah, the gold and red. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of silly.
I agree. And I sort of like both of them.
Huh.
I don't know. I think he's a cool character. I sort of like, there's parts to his power set that's really interesting. And I like the concept. And I think they sort of played with it a little bit. I think it was Dixon who was doing it. But I think they were playing with, is it his costume? When he puts on the costume and the cowl and the head part, that's when Jean-Paul turns off his personality, and that's when Azrael takes over.
Hmm.
So Azrael's very violent and does not even, he has no heart, no remorse for causing this uber violence to people where Jean-Paul doesn't want to cause. And that's where him and Leslie was like, you don't need violence in your life to do what you need to do, what you're called to do.
Right, right.
But yet something takes over in you. And I sort of like, because even him talking to Batgirl, Batgirl's not talking back to him, so it's like him talking to himself, but not really. It doesn't look weird. But him explaining, I don't want to put on the cowl yet because I don't want to inflict that level of violence yet. And I liked when he went to that white and red costume. He didn't know if he would have those superpowers. He was a little tentative when he first started to fight in that new costume. And I'm like, that's sort of interesting. It's like Samson's hair.
Hmm.
Like, is all of Samson's strength coming from his hair? He doesn't know until his hair gets chopped off. You know? I thought that was sort of interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was trying to figure that out a few months ago. I can't remember. Somebody was talking about Azrael. And the thing that I realized is anytime somebody that hates Azrael talks about Azrael, they don't really say why they don't like him. They're just like, ugh, Azrael. I'm like, well, why? Like, can you expand on why you don't like him?
Now, back in the day when you were reading it, did some of your friends have this aversion to Azrael, or is this sort of just a new thing that you think's popping up?
I don't know if it's not
new, but like the last decade.
I mean, maybe.
But you were reading Azrael when he first debuted, so.
Yeah, I was reading it when it was coming out. I loved it.
I mean, did people. Yeah, but what about your friends? Were they like, like, what was the temperature of the room, would you say?
I don't remember talking to any about it because I didn't really have friends that read comics when that stuff was coming out. But I mean, I assume that people liked Azrael because the comic went for a while, right? Didn't it have like 30 something issues?
Yeah, and maybe more. I know that, what was it, the limited series that sort of has Riel? Wasn't that like a real big hit?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any issue with them. Like, there's, I could throw a dart and find umpteen characters that I think are a hell of a lot more hokey or whatever. And like you said, I never hear specifics.
You know what it is? Here's what I think it might be. I think the thing with Asriel is that he's very much a product of the time, right? Because you remember at the time that that Jean-Paul took over Batman, and then the next few years after, it was like the ultra-violent stuff, right? So like Punisher was getting really big, right? Because I think that's when they had relaunched Marvel Knights. So Punisher had changed quite a bit. Same thing with like Ghost Rider, right? You had an uber-violent Ghost Rider. You had stupid things like Death's Head, which I love still, but you know, like that's, I mean, I think Death's Head came out before that, but he became popular during that era. Characters like Deathstroke were really popular in that era for the same reason. Which is like the ultra violent thing was cool. Like Deadpool, right? I mean, Deadpool's still popular. But it all started with that. And I wonder if part of it is that, and where with Batman, you have like a status quo for such a long time that when you bring in a character like Asriel, people are just like, ugh, this guy sucks, but they can't really tell me why he sucks.
But don't you think the status quo with Batman changed because of like Frank Miller?
I mean, originally, yeah, for sure.
Cause it seems like that's when the tone changed. Everything became a lot more shadowy, noir, a little bit more violent.
But there's still a big time difference between that, right? When did that come out? The Frank Miller stuff? That was 86?
Yeah, I was going to say 86, 87 maybe. Yeah.
So, I mean, you're still looking at
five years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
But, you know, hey, the DC wheel and the Marvel wheel moves a little slow.
I mean, I guess.
I think everybody was playing catch up when they saw how popular dark anti-heroes were. You know, and I think everybody was scrambling trying to get their own version of Punisher and the Dark Knight.
Yeah, maybe.
But I did like, with Nightfall, I did like his complete abuse of power and the suit and the status. And then the Bat family was like, whoa, 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 let's pump the brakes here. You've taken it to a whole different level. Why don't you just step down a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you knew it wasn't going to last in a Batman book, right?
No.
I mean, a character like Dick Grayson taking over, I think, makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
You know? And that ran for a long time. I think a large part of the reason why that lasted as long as it did was that Grant Morrison wanted that. Right? And when DC decided, hey, Grant, you're not going to be on this anymore, that's when things started changing again.
Sure.
But I guarantee you, if Grant Morrison had stayed on Batman, Dick Grayson would still be Batman.
Oh, that'd be so good.
I agree. Dick is the best Batman.
Yeah, he's so good.
He is.
So much fun. All right, I have two Grant Morrison things. One, my comic book shop is doing a midnight release for Green Lantern number one.
Oh, yeah.
I like that it's this popular to warrant a midnight release. That is fun.
So, I see what you're saying, but the shops don't choose.
Oh, I thought they did.
No. The publishers say, hey, if you guys want to do a midnight release, you can.
Ah, ha, ha. That's interesting.
Otherwise, they cannot. They have to wait until the shop opens at whatever, 10 or 11. It's some like ancient artifact of the way comic shop works.
Yeah, that is weird.
Because like if you, all right, let's say you had two shops with it and like, well, I mean, you have 3,000 shops in Chicago. But, like, let's say that you had two shops within a couple miles of each other. It would be anti-competitive for one shop to do the midnight release and the other one not to do it, right? Because, I mean, as a shop, you could technically do whatever you wanted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, technically, there's nothing stopping you from releasing your books on Tuesday, because you're getting them Monday or Tuesday anyway.
Sure.
By the way, what day used to be comic book day? Wasn't it like Thursday or Friday? No, it was earlier, right?
Yeah, I thought it was Tuesday.
It was Tuesday, right? Okay, that's what I thought. I
thought so.
I was trying to figure it out the other day. I couldn't remember. Anyway, so it's some anti-competitive thing where, like, the publisher has to control those midnight releases.
I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, well.
If a dumb shop wants to open up at midnight, let them open up at midnight. They're selling it on Wednesday, technically.
Sure, but then, like...
Unless I see the publisher doing that for the death of Captain America, or a death of, or whatever. I see, like, no, we have to have everybody release it at the same time so there's no spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wedding of Batman. Like, I can see them saying, like,
wait, the
10 o'clock, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. That, no matter where you are in the globe, you could release it at that time.
Yeah, right.
Like, at least then it won't get spoiled. But for them to be like, no, a shop, X shop cannot open up at midnight whenever they want and start selling the books. I'd be like, well, it's Wednesday. Like,
right.
You can't tell me when to open up the shop. If I want to be here at midnight, I can be here at midnight.
Yep, that's not the way it works.
Unless DC's like, oh, and we'll send you 50 extra copies, you know, free of charge.
Well, that is.
Then it's like, oh, okay, then I, all right, here's an incentive for me to open up at midnight.
Yeah, yeah, that is the incentive. So when they do midnight release parties, they are publisher approved, and often the publishers will do something, right? Like, you'll get like bookmarks or something, you know, like something stupid.
Like Batman Day has like, whatever it was, White Knight, a little like Batman Day, here's a Batman Day logo on it.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stupid stuff like that.
But everybody wants to collect every issue of X comic book. So that, guess what? That shit works.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, so that's the reason. It's some anti-competitive thing, and that's why it has to be approved by the publisher, and the shops just can't nilly-willy do midnight releases.
But buddy, it is Grant Morrison.
Well, you're right. You're right.
That's a lot of fun.
You're right.
I like that he warrants that. Do I wish that Warren Ellis warranted that when The Wildstorm #1 came out? Yeah. I wish DC had that much confidence in it to be like, yeah, we'll do a midnight thing for that. Hell yeah.
I think with The Wildstorm, it's not a matter of confidence. I think it's more a matter of it's not a core product. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know what you mean. But still, are you saying you're putting this on Green Lantern to be the big hullabaloo? No, it's a Grant Morrison book.
Absolutely.
Like I said, I wish they put that much hullabaloo behind, ooh, this is a Warren Ellis book.
Sure. Well, I mean, if Warren Ellis, like, relaunched, what would he be good at? Let me see.
Oh, let's think about this. I know what I would love to see him on, but I don't think he would ever see it, and it wouldn't warrant a midnight release. But I would love to see him do Creeper.
Ooh, interesting.
My first thought went to Swamp Thing, but there's a lot better horror people out there to do a Swamp Thing book.
There are.
But the Creeper? That would be fun.
That's interesting that that's what you chose. So my immediate initial reaction when I said that was Wonder Woman.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one. That's a real good one.
I think he'd be fantastic on a Wonder Woman book.
Yeah. But don't you think he wants to play in like a sci-fi realm? Like, he does like the modern gadgets. He like, I don't know.
I mean,
Wonder Woman has a lot to do with the past.
Yeah, but why?
You know what I'm saying?
No, all right. There's exactly the point though. Why? Because, all right, here's the thing with Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is not a big seller. Okay. The reason DC keeps doing Wonder Woman books is that they don't revert the rights back to the Marsden family or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to put out a Wonder Woman book every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the deal. But the thing is, and I don't know if this maybe has something to do with the Marsden family. I wouldn't think so. But every single run of Wonder Woman always boils down to the same fucking type of story.
Oh.
I'm serious. It's always like this bullshit with the Amazon and Ares and the clay, or is it not clay? And like, come on. Oh. Like, how many decades of that kind of thing can you do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why not let somebody completely new try to take on the character and do something new and different with it? That's all I'm saying.
Can I throw out one, and this completely, as soon as you said that, it's the first name that popped into my head.
Wait, before you say that, hold that thought. I'm gonna fix this for you right now.
Sure.
It's also the episode title, Wonder Woman in Space. All right, continue. I'm just kidding. I don't want to see that, but continue.
Interesting. When Brian Azzarello took over Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And at this point, they've already had Phil Jimenez do a huge run.
Let me place this. That's when she had Jason as her brother, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, yeah, continue.
But this was after Byrne had a huge run.
Mm-hmm.
Perez has a huge run. Phil Jimenez, huge run. Greg Rucka, huge run.
Mm-hmm.
But no one sustained it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, no one can figure out that little, like, Chinese finger puzzle trick. no one can crack that nut. So when Brian Azzarello came on and I was like, oh, and who was that? Cliff Chang?
Yeah.
Did the art?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, he's going to bring it in a new space. He's going to take it where it hasn't ever been. And holy crud, he brought it more to the traditional tenets of Wonder Woman. He brought it backwards. He didn't push it forward. He went backwards, even though it was a great run. I loved it. But, like, tied it in even more to the old tenets of Wonder Woman. Like, he did a huge reset on her, which was fantastic. But still, it's coming off of Wonder Woman cranking Maxwell Lord's head clean around.
Right.
Like, holy Christ, you have, like, a really dented character that you could be playing around with. And instead, you just sort of reset her back to her traditional ways instead of pushing her forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when you're like, it always talks about the same damn thing. Like, here comes Ares. Okay, we know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's fine, right? You know, like, it's good. There's been great runs.
Mm-hmm.
You just named a bunch of them. But, like, why not do something else?
Yeah.
Right?
But for me, Ellis, my first thought, Creeper,
mm-hmm.
I think a better idea, Checkmate.
Oh, yeah.
Because Warren Ellis loves 50,000 people involved in a military conspiracy.
Yeah.
A modern telling of a conspiracy tale. The government's not telling you everything. He could be fucking hitting home run. Put Amanda Waller in there. You want to see just a complete jacked story? Oh, yeah. Put Warren Ellis in there with Amanda Waller. Holy Christ.
All right, I'm 100% in on this. All right, I'm 99% in on this.
Get Warren Ellis on the phone.
Get the. I don't want Amanda Waller in there.
Oh, I like the old Amanda Waller.
I'm just a little Waldered out.
Okay. Hey, I don't mind bringing in a little Hollywood. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm working well with the Hollywood folk.
Yeah, I gotcha. No, I gotcha. But I wouldn't mind seeing a Waller type character. I think that'd be cool.
Sure.
Just not Amanda Waller.
I hear you. I get you. Oh, but my second Grant Morrison thingy?
Yeah.
I wrapped up book 4 of the Invisibles.
God, I'm so jealous.
Series. All done.
I'm so jealous.
I put my hands together. Wipe, wipe, wipe. Hands go out. Just like I'm a Las Vegas dealer unpackaging new cards. Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. Hands go across. Wipe, wipe, wipe. Buddy, it goes effing play. Like, the way you're reading it might not be the best way. I'm telling you right now. Book 4 goes back to book 2.
Oh, wow.
And there are scenes in there that he redoes with the same people saying pretty much the same thing, but decades have passed. And the context of that scene, even though it's pretty much the same, completely different.
It's like
you talking to your father now, and then you right now talking to your father 30 years ago. But you're now, like, you have your experiences now, but you're talking to your dad who doesn't have the same experiences 30 years from now.
Hmm.
It's fast, like, the way he pivots his perception, like, his point of view and perception is fantastic. And I hate to say it, like, do I understand 100% of it? No. Do I know where he's going and what he tried to accomplish. No. But was it a wild roller coaster ride? Did he speak? Were there bits in Invisibles that were so beyond my head? Yes. As well as it made me, and I think comic books, great comic books, will do this. And I will put Watchmen up there without a doubt. They talk about subject matter that you know is based in reality,
mm-hmm.
or realities like in our, like concepts that you can do research on, or events that you can research. And just like Watchmen, like Invisibles made me want to go like, well, what is string theory? Well, what is, you know, I understand what depth perception is, but he's talking about it in these different terms. Is that something I can go and do research on? And sure as hell, I can do research on it. Like, right. It's out there.
Right.
So all this religious items that he's like piecing together and like combining up two religions or combining up like these two cult theories is fascinating enough to me that it's like, damn, I wish Morrison would come out with a Cliff Notes version of like, oh, this is based in witchcraft. Oh, this is based in, you know, Darwinism. Oh, this is based in like Mason cult theory.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know it's all out there.
Right.
But then if you read book one, so like, I'm sure you can already read into, wow, Morrison must have been doing a lot of peyote or LSD. Holy shit. Where is all this going? Where does he pull these like theories out from? And it's like, yeah, he probably was doing all these crazy drugs. He was probably living a life of hedonism, and it's just fascinating.
So I almost wish you hadn't told me that, but now I'm glad you told me that.
I just don't want you to read a book a year and forget the trail from one book to the other. That's all.
No. So part of my plan for this week, since I'm not really podcasting, was to finish all the way through Invisibles.
Mm.
But the problem is, based on what you just told me, I almost don't want to be influenced on this thing that I'm writing. Because, as you know, part of the reason that I wanted to take this time off was to spend a week or so on the story that I want to work on, that I've had in my head for a while. And
sure.
There's a lot of religious stuff and language play and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't want what you just told me, I don't want it to influence the direction of what I'm writing. Because just the little tidbits that you mentioned kind of go kind of close to some of the things that I'm working on.
Yeah, he even has people ingest this liquid called Key 23. And I haven't researched this at all to see if this was even a thing. It really reminds me of Matt Hawkins. When he writes about like military weapons and technology,
mm-hmm.
that's because he's talking to somebody in the military who can't go on record and be like, yeah, the thing that you're describing to me, we invented 10 years ago. And the reason you're hearing about it now is because we can finally make this public.
Hmm.
But Matt Hawkins, of course, thinks that this is brand new, like cutting edge technology. So some of the stuff that he's suggesting, quote unquote, has already been in development. You know, he's already talking to a military engineer just to see, can this concept be real? And the guy will confirm or deny, but he can't go on record to confirm or deny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's why it's fun to read his stuff. Well, Morrison, like this Key 23, it's like you ingest it, and then all of a sudden, like the words, like you can use words as a weapon, like they materialize. And I'm just like, if that is a real concept, that's fascinating. If he just made that up, holy Christ, that's fascinating. Like, I have no idea, but it's just like, it's weird concepts like that, that maybe he twists somebody else's concept into what he wants to use it for.
Mm-hmm.
But it still takes you places that's like, yeah, there's guns and there's hyperviolence and like, it's very stylized, and he certainly gets amazing group of artists to go with him on this journey. And even the last issue,
mm-hmm.
I totally forgot about this, but the last issue is drawn by Frank Quitely.
Oh, nice.
So I was just like, is this the first thing they teamed up on? Because I don't recall anything previous to that, but it was really fun to see that and then imagine, oh my God, these guys have really, they've collaborated on many, many things after this.
So Key 23 was an occult / underground / counterculture blog.
Wow. Like I said, I want Morrison like cliff notes. I want like, just give me the keynotes of your research that you did for this. There's no way it all came out of his head. That's what I find fascinating. Like all the amount of research he has done, it would be fascinating to read some of this stuff.
Hmm.
So, and after especially a lot of the interviews, and he's like, yeah, that was my most like hedonistic time. That was like, it started with Doom Patrol and Animal Man. And when I got to Invisibles, holy Christ, was I off my rocker. and you could see that. Like, if you read Doom Patrol into Animal Man and then into Invisibles, it's like, wow, was that a roller coaster?
Right.
It's like all of the conventional shackles are off of. And I totally get, like, there's tons. And I'm even one of them at times. Where, like, I'm a curmudgeon that I just want capes and cowls, damn it. Like, I don't need you to push boundaries. Just give me an entertain me. Give me an entertaining story. But there's times where I love just kicking back and seeing where he's going. And some of the places he goes is very naughty. He definitely explores like S&M culture. He definitely explores like, lesbian and gay culture. And it's fascinating.
Hmm.
Without being Garth Ennis preacher. We're having a leather party and oh my God, look, somebody walking around in assless chaps and like, it's not exploitive like Preacher was,
right,
you know,
right.
Preacher, there's a shock value to like, holy shit, did he just do that? But not here. It's all set up and it's interesting. There's like three or four references throughout the entire series where he's referencing I think it's a 60s show, but, The Prisoner. And I know we talked about The Prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see it. Like, he loves mod clothes. He loves also very, like, futuristic clothes. And you could just tell, like, he's playing in, like, conventions. And, like, all of a sudden it goes to the 70s. And people are dressed up and they look like they're in, like, an early James Bond film. With big handlebar mustaches, and it's drawn by Philip Bond, which is perfect because Philip Bond has that, you know, retro 60s, 70s vibe
right.
to his art.
Right.
So it's perfect. And one quick aside, and then we can take it wherever you want to take it.
Oh, I like it here. This is good.
Okay. The last, like, set, the last graphic novel, the last 12 issues. Within those 12 issues, I want to say 5 or 6 pages were drawn by the I think they're the Panda Brothers.
Panda Brothers.
I think that's their name. Panda Brothers. Well, anywho, it's a duo of artists, and the last time I saw their work, and I totally forgot they even did these pages, because like I said, it was like 5 pages. The last time I saw their work was in Grendel. Like they did like a large run on Grendel, like 16 issues, I want to say. And they were just fantastic. It was completely out of left field. Like when you're going through like the last story arc, almost all of the 12 issues are like 4 pages by Philip Bond, 4 pages by the Panda Brothers, 4 pages by whoever, Guy Police, 4 pages by Sean Phillips. So it's all like people that I recognize, but to see like, Philip Bond, clean, beautiful, like thick, like black line work. And then the Panda Brothers, which are very, very like sort of like early 60s art deco, really loose art. It was fascinating to see like how much like each style sort of jerked you into like, oh, 17 years later. And then there's a brand new artist and it just jerks you right into like, whoa, there's something new happening here.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of slaps you awake. It was fascinating. And like I said, dude, you could ask me right now, like, so what does Invisibles mean? Like, tell me the story arc. I couldn't. I can only talk of Invisibles conceptually. And I sort of like that. And to be honest with you, like, Swamp Thing, like Alan Moore Swamp Thing, sort of does the same thing for me. I could tell you storylines, but there's an overarching arc to that that you sort of don't want to. You want to stay in that, those areas.
Right.
Like, I know it as gothic horror, gothic romance. I don't want to be like, oh, and then this happened, and then this happened. Like, no, it doesn't deserve to be compartmentalized like that.
Hmm.
But trust me, I don't want to sell anyone on this. If you don't like Morrison, the only thing I can recommend is his Superman. I think that's phenomenal. If you hate Morrison, try that.
Oh yeah, I like that one. All-Star.
Yeah, All-Star. Yeah, All-Star.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would also recommend his Batman and Robin.
Yep.
I'd recommend that, and I'd recommend Doom Patrol just because it's such a wacky, goofy, but it's fun. But his other stuff, like, I can't recommend all of, like, I know what I like, and I like the challenge of it. I like that it doesn't all come together. I can watch a movie and be completely satiated with, especially a lot of the, like, experimental theater of, like, the 60s and 70s, where it just ends.
Mm-hmm.
My dinner with Andre, you know what that is? It's two people having dinner. That's it. And it doesn't have to have a climax. It doesn't have to have an ending. It just ends.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you don't need to have a climax on anything.
Yeah, I know.
Have you ever read Jerusalem, Alan Moore?
No.
Oh, boy.
Is that in my wheelhouse?
I think if you enjoyed, I mean, like, I'm only one volume into Invisibles, but if you enjoyed it as much as I'm enjoying it, and it seems like you are really digging it, and you don't care about the craziness, Jerusalem is, it's crazy. Did you ever read Promethea?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so take Promethea and, like, triple your LSD dose.
Ooh.
And you've got somewhere close to Jerusalem.
Okay.
Really interesting stuff. No, I'm down for this. By the way, I found this, Key 23 thing. You can, mm-hmm. The website no longer exists.
of course.
But you can go to hermetic.com/key23. And, from there, on the sidebar, you can get articles, features, interviews, reviews, etc.
Jeez.
There's actually a couple articles about Grant Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
One that I can't read because apparently they didn't upload it.
Oh. Well, look, I mean, see, I put Grant Morrison's writing in the same basket that I would put Area 51.
Hmm.
Even if you don't believe in aliens, do you want to read about Area 51?
Yes, I do.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you might not like everything Morrison does, but do you like the concept of Area 51? Like, oh, okay, then go. Like, for me, it's just you take off the conventional comic book structure and just, like, do you want to get on that roller coaster? Because it's going to take you places.
You know, Nick, let me tell you, Grant Morrison is like the Azrael of comic book writers.
Oh.
All right, let's bring this back.
Sure.
Because Grant Morrison is one of those things, too, where, like, I never hear anybody tell me exactly why they don't like Grant Morrison. I mean, I love Grant Morrison. I could give you a list of a dozen things I like about the way he writes things.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that I know that don't like Morrison, the only thing they can really say is, oh, well, he's kind of pretentious, or, oh, he just writes nonsense. And to me, those are terrible excuses, because I feel like if you feel like he just writes pretentious nonsense, it just tells me you don't understand what he's trying to write. And you're also not spending the time to figure out what he's trying to say.
You know what this reminds me of?
But because, let me say, I'm not disagreeing. It's pretentious nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it does mean something. So continue.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, the many conversations that I've had with many people when Bendis went over to DC, before he went over to DC.
I knew this was going to come up.
And everybody hated Bendis, hated on him, pooped all over him.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I asked them, I would say 90% of the people would be like, well, I read three of his Avengers issues, or, oh, I tried his X-Men stuff, and that wasn't for me. And it's like, well, yeah, but guess what? Morrison, sure, you might have read Arkham Asylum and didn't like it. Hey, guess what? I sort of didn't like it either. But I didn't stop with that. Like, at some point, you have to be like, I get if you don't like Westerns or war comics. It doesn't matter if that's Joe Kubrick drawing that. If you don't like war comics, you're not going to like it. It doesn't matter who's drawing it or writing it.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And I totally understand that. But if the person like Bendis or Morrison, they're tapping into different genres, different superheroes, different. And it's like at some point you have to hear that name so many times, at least for me, I'm like, what's all the hubbub? Let me try this again. Instead of just writing the person off.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what I'm saying, right? So if so many people like the guy and, like, I don't know, have so much to say about the guy, then mm-hmm. surely there's got to be something in there that makes the guy special, right? And you mentioned Bendis. I have been one of the people on the anti-Bendis camp, but not because I don't like Bendis, just because I didn't really appreciate a lot of Bendis's Marvel stuff. Like,
sure.
The stuff that he did before he went to Marvel, I really enjoyed.
Uh-huh.
Even some things he did at Marvel I like Alias, for example, the Jessica Jones uh-huh. book. I really enjoy that book. And you mentioned Avengers. That's... I hated his Avengers run with a passion. And it also didn't help that J.R.J.R. was the artist on that book, whom I also uh-huh. don't like.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Sure.
But
sure, sure.
That's a personal preference and art style.
Right.
I had issues with mostly the way he did dialogue in those books.
Yeah, that's why you only hear me recommend Alias or Daredevil.
Right.
And the problem is with his Daredevil run, there's so many issues. I can't blame anyone. There's two omnibuses for Alex Maleev and Bendis's Daredevil run.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally understand when people are like, well, I can't read all that.
Right.
And you know how comic book readers and collectors are. They ain't going to read just one arc. If they're going to put down their money, they want to read it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of money to put down. So I can't really blame them if you already have that stigma in your head of like, no, I don't care for Bendis. But I love that people at least now are sort of open. And it felt like they were open with Morrison when it came to Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't hear a lot of people pooping on that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So it's nice to hear Bendis, like at least people are open to the Superman stuff. And it seems like a lot of people are like, well, I've been hearing so much about his powers. Let me give that a shot. Or let me give one of his other, you know, noir crime type things a shot. Because they like Superman enough. And it's like, well, that's cool. At least people are open, like, you sort of won me over with this. Let me try something else.
Yep.
Which is great. You know, I can't blame anyone to be like, yeah, but that X-Men run of Bendis, ugh, he brought back the original X-Men into modern times. I thought that was a cool concept. Mm-hmm. I liked it. It was fun. But I totally get how people are like, no, I'm not buying into that. No, thank you.
Yeah, I dug it. And X-Men Blue, I think, is a great book. So, I mean, those characters are going away now with Extermination, but.
They did?
Well, not yet.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I think the plan is to get rid of them.
Yeah, see, for me, Old Man Logan works.
Yeah.
But why can't there be Logan and Old Man Logan? And some readers will go back and forth. Some readers will pick the Logan lane that they want to go down and never veer off into the other lane. But if they're both popular, you don't need to get rid of both.
Dude, if you like Old Man Logan, you should read Old Man Hawkeye.
I will, yes.
Old Man Hawkeye is fan-fucking-tastic. Fantastic. All right, let me tell you the top Marvel books right now.
Yeah, hit me.
Number one, Hulk.
Completely agree.
Amazing.
Yeah, that amazing. Is a phenomenal book.
In fact, I'll do a little side plug. I started reading Panel by Panel. It's a digital-only magazine. And the latest issue, it's put out, I can't remember the guy's name, something Hassan. He's a comic book letterer. And he puts this magazine together, comes out monthly. The latest issue that just came out two weeks ago, is all on the Immortal Hulk, the series. So they've got like interviews with the creators and stuff. They've got like panel breakdowns. They've got, like essays and stuff on the book and what it means and what it is and what it isn't. It's a fantastic magazine. So I recommend anybody that loves comics to read that. You know, like the cool thing about like Wizard when that was coming out, for example, was they did some of that kind of thing, right? Like there were interviews and like how to draw this and that with my boy Bart Sears. But this is in depth. You know what I'm saying?
Nice.
It's like what I wish every comic book website was.
Oh.
It's brilliant. And it's like $2.50 an issue.
Does it remind you of, I thought Comics Journal was more like that.
Yeah. More like Comics Journal.
Like in depth, like 18 page interviews.
Well, and not just the interviews. I mean, like the breakdowns, like the artist coming in and putting out like pencil pages and like why they chose to do a particular panel layout and like why a different panel layout wouldn't work, or like why the artist chose this line instead of that line, or like why this is in the background instead of the foreground, like really in-depth stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like if you were to take like an art history course or something in college, like really in-depth stuff, except with comics, it's really good. So yeah, panel, it's panel X panel, is what it is. So I'm assuming panel by panel, but, well worth it. Anyways. All right. So Hulk is number one. Number two, All Man Hawkeye. Number three is X-23.
Ooh.
Really freaking good. Number four is Sentry.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic. And I mean, I don't even know if I should put this on there, but I mean, I am. Extermination's really good. And I don't want to put it on there because it's, like an event miniseries, but it's like what the X-Men haven't been in a very long time. Yeah. It's really good. And I mean, some of those, well, I mean, I don't know about the rest of them, but like, and Moon Knight would be number six, by the way. I'll just put that in there. But
okay.
Moon Knight's ending. I think he's only got like one or two issues left. Sentry is only six issues. So that's going away. And we'll see, and Extermination's a mini, but, we'll see. We'll see about the rest. I don't even know what the deal is with Hulk because, what's the guy writing that book? Oh, man, I can never remember his name.
I know it's Joe Bennett and...
Joe Bennett's on art.
Right. Who does that?
Let's just type this out and let's find out. Immortal Hulk.
Yeah.
Immortal Hulk is written, I'm gonna see this name here in a second and be like, yeah, of course, that's the guy. Al Ewing, there we go.
Yeah, there you go.
Fantastic. But see, I thought Al Ewing was going to DC, so I don't know what the deal is with that book.
Oh no, say it ain't so.
I mean, that's what I heard, but I don't know if that's still the case or not. Cause you know, things change.
Cause he was part of that, weekly Avengers book that you really like.
Yeah. Yeah,
the one wasn't that, it him and Wade?
Yep, him and Wade.
Dang, he's been hitting it.
Yep, what was it? Avengers. I want to say Avengers Assembled, but I don't think that's it. Yeah, he's freaking fantastic, dude. Al Ewing, if he's writing it, go pick that up. But yeah, Immortal Hulk's really good,
dude. Immortal Hulk, because I'm reading issue by issue. That's one of the few recent comics that I'm reading by issue every time it comes out. But every issue, it feels like you have read a trade.
Mm.
Not because it's wordy. It just feels so utterly complete and refined, and like it never feels rushed. It just feels timeless.
You know what it is? It's all the issues are self-contained.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got it. All right. I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. It's the reason it's so good is that it is written the way comics were written in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you two reasons why. So number one, it works because the overall structure of the book is structured like the Hulk TV series from the 70s. Okay. The Bill Bixby book. In fact, one of the villains, I think in issue 3 or 4, was a villain from the Hulk TV series. The doctor, the radioactive doctor. I mean, he wasn't a radioactive doctor in the TV series. But it was the same character, the same name.
And the reporter who's tracking him down.
Yep.
And was a reporter in the TV show.
Yep. So the basic structure of that is the TV series from that era. Also the tropes are kind of the tropes from the Hulk TV series from the 70s. However, it's all updated, and then with the twist of it being that because you're updating that structure and storyline, you can be a little more, what would be the word that I want to use? I mean, I don't know. It just, you can take more chances with stories than you would be able to in the 70s, for example, right? And the way that it works really well is it reads a lot like a horror comic would read. If Marvel decided they wanted to put out horror comics, which they don't, but they kind of really do in a hidden way.
It is a gothic romance, gothic horror.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, it, wow, it is. It takes you back to Swamp Thing, but keeping it completely modern.
And I will say, I know people shit on Venom a lot. I didn't mention Venom. I'll probably put that at number 7 because I really love it. But Venom does the same kind of thing. And people shit on it because they're used to Venom being a certain thing. But Venom, at its heart, is kind of like a... I would almost say like an Apocalypse Now kind of story, because there's a lot of that like military psychological stuff going on from Apocalypse Now, but just like the Hulk, it's thinly veiled as a horror story. Let's go back to Hulk.
Can I ask you a quick question before leaving Venom?
Yeah.
Have you read the Venom story that's set in Vietnam? Because I've only seen covers, and I don't even know if it's out, but I found it fascinating.
You're talking about what was it? Web of Venom?
Yeah, Venom or whatever it is.
Yeah. I read the first issue. I haven't read the second one yet.
Because it just looks fun.
Yeah, it's good. So,
just like Frank Castle going back to the Korea or going back to Vietnam or whatever, setting him in a war situation that seems like a powder keg waiting to blow.
So, yes, Venom is not in that book per se, but there are Venoms. So if you want to read Web of Venom, then you need to be reading the Venom ongoing, because one of the main characters in Web of Venom is one of the backup characters in Venom. It's a guy that Eddie Brock meets who used to have a Venom symbiote and worked for S.H.I.E.L.D. And so Web of Venom kind of tells his story in Vietnam.
Oh, neat.
And you do see old school eye patch white guy Nick Fury in that, because, of course, he was still in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. And now, gotcha. Oddly enough, Wolverine is in that book. But you know what? It really worked.
Yeah, as long as it's entertaining, I'm not expecting...
It really worked. Well, and the thing is, it takes place in the 70s, right? So it was before Wolverine joined the X-Men.
Oh, that's fun.
So there's like a little joke in there, like you'd be a shitty teammate if you were on a team. but anyway, yeah, it's really good. I think Venom's well worth picking up.
Okay, cool.
But again, people shit on it for some reason. So, so going back to this thing. So it reads like a 70s book. I'm trying to think like who did this, and you might remember better than me. But there is a particular writer from that era that did this really, really well. And there's going to be people listening to the podcast and be like, you motherfucker, it's blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, yes, you're right. So that's why I'm asking for the name. So you're telling a story, right? So back then you weren't writing for trade. Right. So
right.
You were writing mostly single issue stories. I mean, you would still have like, you know, 4-issue stories sometimes or whatever, longer or shorter.
Sure.
But for the most part, they were all single issue stories. Right. But there's a writer, that was really good at wanting you to continue the book even through telling single issue stories, right? Because the problem with single issue stories is they're one and dones, right? So you don't need to read anything before or anything after.
Right.
But what this person did was would tell their one and dones, but there would be like 3 different plot lines in the book, right? So like there's a plot line developing in your one and done.
Sure.
That somehow ties in to the next issue that's also a one and done, right? And this happens every single issue. There's also like a 3rd plot line going on that you might not see for 12 issues, okay? But like it's developing little by little in each of these one and dones. And eventually you get that as the main story that's also a one and done. And I can't remember who the hell it is. And there's no way for me to look this up. Cause like how am I going to duck that go that? You know what I mean?
Right, right. I remember a lot of writers like Roger Stern would do that a lot.
Not, where it's not like Stern, but you're close. What's, the Captain America like guy? The Captain America guy. That's it. The Captain America guy. What's his name? Oh my God. The guy that Mike loves.
Draw a blank.
I'm looking up Captain America writers right now. Why is Scarlett Johansson showing up? I said writers. Don Cheadle. What's happening right now?
When's he writing Captain America?
Why is he searching on Google? I don't use Google.
What is wrong with your DuckDuckGo?
Oh my God.
But I know what you're talking about. Like there's an A and a B story, sometimes a C storyline.
Yeah.
And they'll wrap up one. And then even if it's a personal relationship story that's B, that will be continued into the 2nd issue.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really need to know anything about it.
No.
It just sort of flows into it.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I miss that storytelling.
Right?
Plot device. Yeah. That was fun.
Mark Grimwald, that's who does it. Oh, he's there you really go. Yeah. Freaking good at that.
Yeah, he's really good
really
at that.
Really good at that.
Now you'll make me want to go read some Mark Grunwald. Come on, man.
DeFalco? Oh, he's really good at that, too.
Yeah, he is.
Immortal Hulk. God, that's so good.
Dang it. And I'm all set up to start reading Damnation. And now you're tempting me to send me down a Captain America rabbit hole.
The new book's really good, dude. Coates is writing it.
Yeah. I got the whole event. The Damnation event. Yeah. I grabbed that in the last sale.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But like I said, now I want to head down some Captain America Epic Collection rabbit hole.
I hear you, man.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you. How do we get on that? There's a reason we got on this top Marvel book thing.
Because Immortal Hulk is being written very similar to a 70s Cap book.
Mm. Maybe that's what
that's what's sitting it down.
Yeah, that could be it. But
maybe I'll read Captain America Justice is Served, which also has pencils by one Mike Zack.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. And John Byrne.
You should read Captain America Reborn.
Ooh.
Don't read
it. I like that.
No, don't read it. It's bad.
Let's find Hitch.
No, it was the Liefeld one.
Oh yeah, that one. Yeah. I did read that back in the day.
I did too. I was like, oh my God, Liefeld and Jim Lee are doing Marvel characters. Hell yeah.
But guess what? I still like the transparent shield. I still think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That speaks to my fanboy.
Yeah, that's not bad. Did you see Jim Lee's tweet? I thought it was hilarious. About the cover to, I think it was Uncanny X-Men.
Mm-mm.
You know the one I'm talking about. It's got a Cyclops and Wolverine in it. Wolverine had the brown costume still. And, somebody had mentioned it because he's like, why are there 2 different covers? And I'm thinking to myself, 2 different covers to this book. Matter of fact, let me see if I can find it so I know exactly what issue it is. But, sure. He's like, yeah, the newsstand cover was this, And then the direct market one was this.
Ooh.
And it was really, oh, here we go. I found it. It is, oh, X-Men number one. Duh.
Huh.
X-Men number one. So it's got Cyclops and Wolverine and Iceman on the cover.
Okay.
And on the one cover, Wolverine only has one claw out, right? The, ooh, the right one, but the left one is just like making a fist. And, huh, then, and then in the other cover, he's got both, claws coming out, or whatever, all six, both hands claws coming out.
Yeah.
And the reason for that apparently was because the A cover had the 50 years of Marvel, emblem thing on the lower right.
Okay.
And it had a Captain America's face on it. And apparently Jim Lee didn't want to put a claw through Captain America's face. So, so when they redid this cover for this other edition, the little 50 years of Marvel wasn't there. And so he actually penciled in the claws on this other cover. I thought, jeez, that was pretty neat.
That's wild.
You know, that's something that like you never think about.
Wow. Where before it was just, oh, here's, it's a diamond up where the prices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, this is direct market. Here's the diamond.
Yep. Ah, those days. Remember we used to go anywhere and just find comics?
God, now all they could do the same thing now, but just make the variant cover like, oh, if you're a subscriber to, you know, X-Men, that's the cover you'll get. You know how many subscribers you'd get just because they want to have that B cover?
Yeah, you know, Valiant used to do that when they first launched in 2012.
Mm.
They had the subscriber, or it was called the pull box variants.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's smart.
It is.
And it is. I hate to say it, if you're a cover artist, now all of a sudden you're getting paid for two covers that you can go and sell both.
Mm-hmm.
Extra money.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Little things mean a lot. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Little things mean a lot.
Yeah, I understand that thought process for,
mm-hmm,
sure.
Mm-hmm. So, man, that's a lot of comic talk. What has happened to the show?
I know. Well, we were really good last episode, but this episode, guess what? I finished Invisibles and I finished No Man's Land, and I had to let you know. I was very excited. Those are two big things, dude.
It is.
It's a lot of reading.
It is a lot of reading. Are you, are you ordering any of these new Alexa things out of curiosity?
The Alexa vibrator or the Alexa, microwave or the Alexa ShamWow? No, yeah. I'm not ordering any of that.
Oh, really? Hmm.
My wife was very jealous that you're looking at the Alexa microwave.
Yeah. Yeah. We're thinking about this microwave. We just bought a microwave.
I thought you were looking for a microwave.
We bought one.
Because you want one to be able to fit like two whole turkeys in it.
Yeah, we bought one. My wife found a used one somewhere. I don't know. Like fucking, not Craigslist, Facebook, whatever. I don't know. Something. So we bought one. It's nice. It's great.
All right.
But you know what? I can't say, Alexa, tell my microwave to cook my potato. And it sets it to the exact amount of time. You know what I mean?
Alexa, cook that Oh, shoot. I just activated her.
I've learned.
Dang.
I've learned. I mute mine when we record so it doesn't go off.
Smart. Well, yeah. I like having her around.
I know. She's so friendly.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, Siri, cook me that reheat that sandwich that I put into you 3 hours ago. Because I'm sure that loose meat ham sandwich tastes fantastic sitting in you for 3 hours.
Dude, you don't do that.
What are you talking about? How could you tell Alexa? Well, dang it. There she is again. Three's company, Alexa. Get out of here. But how can you? You have to have something in her to tell her to like heat it up reheat or whatever.
We're getting banned from iTunes right now.
We're talking about a microwave. iTunes, get out of here.
No, dude, it's very simple. You open it, you put your food in it.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't have a microphone. It has to be paired to an Alexa. Which is fine.
So you don't.
I have one in the kitchen on top of the microwave.
So you're going. Okay. So the whole point of a Alexa. Dang it. She even heard that. Come on now. No win. So the only way that getting that version of a microwave, the Siri microwave, the only advantage of that would be you're not pressing buttons. You can just say reheat 2 minutes, 30 seconds start and off, you're off to the races.
You could do that. No, but that's not what's good about it. You would say, so you want to thaw out your ground beef. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Which I don't recommend doing in a microwave, but if you wanted to do that in the microwave, I mean, you could do like the defrost button twice, right? Cause they do half pound increments. You could press it twice and then it'll start and do your 12 minutes and 30 seconds. I think it is. And then it would do that. Or you could just say, Alexa, defrost or tell microwave to defrost 1 pound of beef. And then you don't need to remember anything. You don't need to press any buttons. It just does it. Or like, here's a perfect example. I'm going to tell you the perfect example. Okay. Think about this for a second. Think about your microwave. Sure. Okay.
Okay.
Your microwave has a lot of buttons.
Yes.
Okay. It has, numbers and it has special buttons for like defrost and stuff like that.
Yeah. Shortcut buttons.
What is the only food button on the microwave?
Popcorn.
Popcorn. Exactly. What is the have you ever tried to make popcorn in the microwave?
No, we don't.
Okay, let me tell you. Do not make popcorn in your microwave.
Oh?
I'm going to tell you why. Because your microwave will burn the shit out of your popcorn. If you press the popcorn button.
Whatever, so it's false advertising.
Whatever setting is programmed on there does not work for A, all brands of popcorn.
Oh.
B, all sizes of popcorn bags.
Oh no.
Because it's like, it's an average. So I'm sure at some point the 4 minutes or 5 minutes that the popcorn button gives you, worked.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that's no longer the case. And some popcorns take a different amount of time. The other problem is as advanced, look, we can put people on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot estimate how much time it takes to fully pop a bag of popcorn. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous, Nick.
Well, I mean, let's correct that statement. We can put people in an Arizona desert and say it's the moon.
Yes.
But we still can't pop a bag of frickin' Orville Redenbacher.
We can get Stanley Kubrick to direct a fake moon landing and tell
Correct.
The people that's what happened.
Correct.
But we cannot accurately tell people how long to microwave their popcorn. Here's the thing.
That's right.
If you look at a bag of popcorn, it tells you it depends on whatever, what microwave
yes.
you have. Okay.
The size and the voltage yeah. and the power out. Yes.
So
yes,
is
yes.
it like an 800 watt, a 1200 watt, a yeah. 1200 watt? Let me tell you, number one.
All conspiracy.
Who the fuck knows what wattage is in their fucking microwave? Nobody.
Right.
So
you're
already guessing. Who?
You know who does?
Alexa.
Thank you. Now I didn't activate my own. See, we're on the same wavelength.
Yes. And if you ever look at these microwave bags of popcorn, they'll give you like a rough estimate, right?
Sort of.
It's like,
but you know when you're supposed to stop that?
When?
When you're smelling the effing bag burning. it's like an inch away from being on fire, that mother effer.
Yes.
Now half the kernels are unpopped. Why? Who knows? I have no idea. Why can't we figure out this technology?
Look, according to the microwave,
I put it right side up.
According to the microwave,
it expanded.
The right amount of time to cook microwave popcorn is when it becomes charcoal for your grill.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's the correct amount of time. With this
correct.
Alexa microwave, you don't need to worry about it because it knows exactly how long, right? I mean, let me tell you.
You would hope.
Reagan eats like 3 bags of popcorn a day.
What kind does she like?
The extra butter something or other. She doesn't care about
movie theater extra
yeah,
butter?
Yeah, that's the one.
No flavors, no spices, no nope. nothing in there.
Nope.
Does she open up the bag and put in some hot sauce?
No.
Ooh, interesting.
Nope. So she does this a lot. And let me tell you, she makes 3 bags of popcorn every day, has for the past God knows how many years. And she still manages to burn fucking bags of popcorn.
How is that? You'd think that she would know exactly, like, ooh, I set it up for 3.5 minutes. And I stopped it with 10 seconds left. All right, here's my total.
After many a year of this happening, I finally said, look, making popcorn is fucking shenanigans. What you need to do is just do it in 30-second increments and just stand by the microwave. Okay, you're only losing like 3 minutes of your life. It's fine.
That's when you're yelling at your daughter.
No, I don't yell. You're like,
hey. Just stand by this dumb microwave with your face pressed up against it so you're getting a little dizzy and tingly from the radiation that it's pushing out. And when it puffs all the way up, take it out. You're done.
Look, you pop it in 30-second increments until you only hear like a couple of pops. Like once it takes like 3 seconds between kernel pops, it's done.
Well, I used to back in the day when I ate microwave popcorn, I would listen. And as soon as the rhythm of the pops started to lengthen, take it out. Stop.
Mm.
And you'd still have tons of undercooked popcorn kernels. But that's maybe how you have to approach your daughter. Like, stay there, put your face up against this thing, listen for the pops, because I don't know if you know this, but daddy is Richie Rich, and we can afford you eating a couple bags of popcorn instead of one bag that you burn, and then that damn smell is through the house for the next 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So just stop it.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Go make another bag of popcorn if you have to.
Oh, or you know how you fix it? You get a fucking Alexa microwave.
That's true. Or you do it on the stovetop. I can't believe you haven't taught your daughter how to heat up oil scalding hot so it's almost smoking, and then you throw in items that will become projectiles as soon as they hit that hot oil.
Well, you know, here's...
Then you shake, put something over it, shake.
So the problem is, we have a glass top oven, stove.
Oh, fancy.
And so the easiest thing to do would be to get the old-timey popcorn. You remember the old-timey popcorn? It came in the little tin plate with the handle on it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Those were the best. The problem is they don't work on glass top ovens or glass top stoves.
Oh, no?
You have to have a flame.
You need the flame. You need a fire pit, son.
I have a fire pit. It's too fucking hot to be by the fire pit.
What?
Dude, it's like 110 degrees every day.
That's when you send the daughter out there.
I'm not going
to. But listen, look, we had to do this when I was young. We had to do this, so get out there.
Back in my day.
Right. And then she'd be like, Daddy, you be crazy.
You know what's funny, though? Some of this back in the day shit, it is funny to make fun of those things. But let me tell you, some of those things are very true, Nick. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've lost the art of taking our time with things. We have.
That's true. We have patience for nothing.
Yeah. We're still thinking about the microwave. I am going to get the Alexa Auto.
Then what's that?
I do want that. It's a little device that connects to your phone via Bluetooth.
Mm-hmm.
Or to your radio via Bluetooth, or you can just do the 3.5 jack. So it uses your phone for internet signal. But it plays everything through your car stereo.
Oh, nice.
And it's an Alexa. And it works very well because, as you know, my garage door is connected to my Echo. And not because the company that makes it actually gave that functionality, because they hate me.
Yes,
it's true. But because I'm a nerd and I found a way to do it with some hacky stuff. But so I always do that.
Illegal shenanigans.
So I've got the Alexa app on my phone. So when I'm getting close to the house, I'm just like, Alexa, open garage door. And it does. But with this thing, I don't need to pick up my phone. Cause you know, I get yelled at when I text in my car.
Mm.
Right. Because.
Yeah, rightly so. Yeah, rightly so.
I mean, I live in a state that doesn't care about the health and safety of its citizens. So we don't have laws against texting and driving.
Yeah, that's true. That sounds safe.
It's very safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very safe.
Sounds safe.
But yeah, I think it'd be cool. You know what I mean? And I've got like my Spotify and all that hooked up. So just be like, hey, play my shit.
Yeah. Play my playlist.
So I think I am going to get that. And that's only like $25. So you know what? Why not?
Why not?
Why not?
Let's go crazy.
The other stuff I don't care about. I think they announced like 50 different things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's like a wall clock.
Wall clock. That's adorable.
There's a wall clock. There's like a subwoofer.
Is there an alarm clock too?
No, just a wall clock. No, you already have an alarm clock. It's called the Alexa. What is it? The Echo Show. That's the one.
No, it's called your telephone. It's called your phone.
That's what I do. Always...
Come on.
That's what I do. But anyways, yeah, good times.
Yeah, it's great times that we live in.
Man, all these
except for that microwave popcorn.
Yeah, bit. Fuck that microwave popcorn.
Dang it,
man! That's like eight profanities in this episode, and they're all related to popcorn. Now I got to put an explicit tag on this thing.
Explicit for popcorn. Popcorn talk.
Oh man! Well, I'm glad that even through our technical difficulties, we still managed to record an entire full episode.
Yeah, but what about the lost episode?
Maybe it'll just be like bonus material.
Will it be lost to the ether? Is it lost to the ether?
I don't know. We'll find out when I try to open it.
I don't care if it's lost to ether. I don't care if it's a bonus episode. It was, what was it, 40 minutes long?
Yes.
So, yeah, throw that out somewhere.
We'll find out.
Heck yeah.
All right, it is wrap-up time.
Yeah, and I hope, Martin, before we go, I hope you can keep to your edict and not podcast this week. Take some time for yourself and do some Martin stuff.
I am. I you can't record Wednesday anyway, so that makes it easier for me to not say, hey, let's record.
Mm-hmm.
I already told Travis and Ronnie I'm not recording.
Good, good.
And you already told
yourself.
Yes.
For CTT that you're not going to record.
All that stuff's already pre-recorded, so I'm not worried about it.
And Martin told Martin, hey, you get on here and record, darn it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to say no.
It'll be good. It'll give me time to write. It'll give me time to read. It'll give me time to finish moving the studio around.
Perfect.
Yeah. You have been listening to the Nerdy Legion Podcast with Nick Wetmore. I got some two-buck chuck at Trader Joe's. It's fantastic.
Oh, did you buy the Belgian?
No, I got a Shiraz.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, good news. They added another section of beer.
Ooh, good.
Remember how I told you they shrank it down? It's like a 6-foot section. Well, now they have like a little freestanding rack in the middle of the aisle.
Oh, fantastic. Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, you can find us on Twitter @Nick Wetmore, @Geekvine, @NerdyLegion. Catch you next time.